Check Podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast. My name is Jason Goldsworthy, and I'm the Executive Director of COAST, the Centre for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. We are Pacific Canada's hub for the sustainable blue economy. We exist to help industry find new commercial solutions to key challenges, support startup and new ventures to commercialise innovation, engage Indigenous leadership in ocean innovation, and attract talent, capital, and partnerships to grow businesses right here in British Columbia. Today's episode of the COAST Talks podcast features Seven Leagues Leather, a company developing commercial wholesale fish leather products. Products that could be as durable as animal leather, but with less harmful impact on the environment. Our guest today is Tasha Nathanson, who's the founder of Seven Leagues Leather, and I'm privileged to be joined with her today. Welcome, Tasha.
Thank you.
So, Tasha, first of all, just a little bit about yourself, your background, and what sort of led you towards Seven Leagues Leather and this venture?
I've got a diverse background, including roles in value-added agriculture, purpose-driven business, international development, and gender equality. Just before starting Seven Leagues, I was in fact working in the Eastern Caribbean on a Canadian-funded project in agriculture, and I just reached a culmination point of frustration with the nonprofit sector, and I decided I wanted to use business as an engine to make an impact instead, and that I wanted to do that at home.
So it was a bit of a journey from frustration into let's do something better. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, great story. So how do you make the leather from the fish? I mean, I think that's it's an incredibly interesting idea that you've come up with, and I'd like to know a little bit more about that process.
Absolutely. So fish leather is a thin, flexible, durable skin with a high tensile strength and a beautiful scale pattern. Most of the process is the same as making leather from other animals. There are a few key differences. Fish skins need much colder temperatures for processing until they've been finished. And then scaling the fish is much less problematic and less nasty than having to dehair mammal skins. So a way to think about it is that a fillet represents only about 50% of a fish on average. So we're making use of part of that other half. But the most important thing to understand about leather making in general is that there are a lot of different ways to do it. And currently, about 85% of leather is made with chrome. Chromium is a cheap, easy, quick way to turn skins into leather, but it's also cancer-causing, polluting, and unless the product, the process is done and the disposal of the product at the end of life are handled with really specific, expensive recapture and safety technologies, it's really unsafe, and those are rarely used. So part of what gives leather a bad reputation as a dirty industry is this cheap and dirty way of making it. But there are other methods too. We take a regenerative approach to build a future-focused company. We're using renewable bioproducts that provide climate services, and we're committed to innovation. So what we do is called veg tanning. This is taking naturally occurring tannins from plant sources, and they bind chemically with the collagen in the skin to create a leather that is essentially half animal and half plant by the end. It's a much cleaner process, and that's the one that we use for making our leather.
How did you come up with this idea? And I mean, obviously, it's fantastic to look at these better ways of doing things, but the overall picture of using fish for leather and then the new process, was it just something that magically came to you, or have you been sort of working through it for the past few years?
We have been working to perfect it for the past few years, but in terms of where the idea came originally, it was from a group of environmental artists in Vancouver who were doing a by-hand exploration of how you could make leather. And so they were presenting this, And when I saw it, I was immediately impressed that it was beautiful. And that's when I learned that it had 9 times the tensile strength per thickness of mammal leather. So it's strong. And forgive the pun, but I thought, oh, you could scale this up. So I gave myself a year to investigate what was the market for this. Could this be done commercially? And that was when I discovered that, yes, there were, in fact, European and a couple South American places that were making fish leather, actually, one in Australia as well, just to curry a little favor with you. But nobody was doing this in Canada or even in North America. And so after spending some time, I worked in a tannery in Europe for a little while. I made some of my own experiments of fish leather, and then I took those to shoe school in Toronto, and I did an intensive shoemaking course. I'm not a shoemaker, but I made a proof of concept pair of shoes, and then I wore them for 6 months every single day without fail through a rainy Vancouver winter and spring. And at the end of the 6 months, the leather was holding up brilliantly, and the cheap thread that I'd used on the seams was starting to break. So I at least had my proof of concept. And after that year of market research and study and experimentation, I saw that this was the way forward, and I incorporated.
I think it sounds like a fantastic testing experiment to do it in Vancouver in the rainy seasons. It's probably the best, most rugged conditions you can put it through.
Absolutely.
How... I was going to sort of pose a question around the global leather industry. Is obviously a massive industry. It's been established for a long time. You mentioned before that, you know, it's got a bad rap because they're doing things maybe not as sustainably as they could. This sort of venture and this sort of innovation, I mean, how important could it be for the global leather industry in the future?
Absolutely vital. There is a great opportunity for disruption in leather production right now, and to improve the production of leather rather than replacing it. So, you know, first I'll address the replacement. There's a lot of chit chat about vegan leather. Most of this is some sort of plant material that is being suspended in plastic, more or less. And people don't seem to know that the plastic is the binder for almost all of those. So it's upscale pleather or vinyl. It's not durable. It adds to the plastic problem. It's not causing a solution. And even if they were able to develop a non-leather leather that didn't use plastics as binders, and people are working on that, the problem is that the skins and hides are a byproduct of food processing. So they exist either way. I was horrified recently to find out a study that pretty close to 100% of all of the skins of cattle that were slaughtered last year in Ontario went directly to the landfill. So if you don't make these into leather, they're going to the landfill where they're off-gassing and they're causing climate change. You're not saving any animals. You're simply wasting product. And that's what I'm looking at, taking the entry point of fish leather. So then the other thing is looking at leather itself, which... So the storyteller in me has a way of telling this, that... You know, if there's always in stories, there's the deal with the devil, but there's a price to pay. And that's the way that 85% of leather is made currently, is with chrome. It's quick, it's cheap, it's easy, it takes very little talent, and it causes cancer and it causes pollution. And so that's your deal with the devil. Like it happens almost magically, but there's a price to pay. What we're doing is veg tanning, which is using the naturally occurring tannins in plants, the same stuff that, you know, you might find in a wine or other products. Those tannins, the plants use them to protect themselves from fungal and bacterial attack. And so the nice thing is, not only are we just like brewing up plant materials as our tanning solution, but they give those antibacterial and antifungal properties to the leather. So instead of making something toxic that hurts people, you're actually making something natural and beautiful. So it's a great solution. It does use more water. So we're working on a circular water system, as part of our improvements. We're also looking at other innovations, like how could we make a biodegradable coating to it? Because a lot of fish leather that's already out there, people want it to be waterproof. And so somebody's going to slap some acrylic on top. Well, then you're back to a plastic material. We're committed to bio solutions and biodegradable solutions. And we're excited about the change. And the idea that we could make this and we could lead the industry. The thing is that because we're not making leather in Canada currently, we're in a good position to do it right because we're not doing it wrong.
And it's, I love the story because, you know, you start with the fish leather, but now you're moving into the processing and how to improve other industries as well. So, you know, you're taking this approach that, you know, the idea of fish leather and using the fish scale as a leather substitute or a leather product, but now looking at better ways to do the tanning process too. And I think that's important in our journey away from our traditional way of doing things into more innovative and sustainable and you mentioned before, circular with the water. So I think it's a fascinating journey that you guys have been on. It must be considering all of those things. I mean, you've got a pretty good team behind you. There's obviously different areas that you're working at. Can you share a little bit about the Seven Leagues team?
Absolutely. So our chief financial officer, John Kay, comes to us. He's a CPA, an MBA. He was the chair of Fair Trade Canada for a decade. He's currently the chair of Canada Co-ops and Mutuals. He's got just a ton of experience with purpose-driven business and runs a consulting firm that, in fact, helps purpose-driven business. So he brings all the strategy, all the financial know-how, he's got that kind of locked in. Then we're also fortunate to be working with Gunstein Bjornsson from Iceland. So he ran Atlantic Leather, which for 30 years, which was the largest fish leather tannery in the world. Some of their clients included Prada, Gucci, and Nike. So very high-end applications for the product that he made when he was running his tannery. And he's now both in leather distribution and consulting. So he is working with us to guide us on our fish leather application. So he's certainly a key figure. I'm also really proud to say that our very first paid employee was Jackson Pye Rogers, who we hired initially when he was a first-year university student, and we hired him through the BC Tech Indigenous Hyper Talent Program. And so our first paid employee was actually an Indigenous student who was studying business at Sauder at the time. And he worked with us kind of off and on throughout his whole time at UBC. He's now graduated and working as a consultant himself in an Indigenous consulting firm, but he's still working with us as well. So that's another part of the team that kind of shows where we're going with this, that we intend a holistic and inclusive business model that we have shared prosperity in our sights, and that's kind of how we're designing it. So those are some of the key members.
It's a fabulous team. And you talked a little bit about the partnership or the opportunities with Prada, Gucci, Nike, those bigger entities. Are you starting to see that those companies are taking into account more of that sort of impact type investment, that consideration for equality, social governance type approach, that they're looking to products like this fish leather that are done in a more sustainable manner rather than just the cheap, and I'll say nasty, but the cheap alternatives? Are you seeing that transition a little bit happening?
Absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned ESG, because that's the environmental social governance. We find that not only are we providing a product that has a good story to tell, that solves ESG problems for fashion brands that might want to use it, but we're also already getting calls from fish processors, not only here in Canada, but over the line in the US and also from Asia, because they're looking at it as an ESG solution as well as fish processors. So we're making leather, but our leather is also a solution for both our supply chain members and to our eventual customers.
Yeah, it's a really innovative way to look at it, isn't it? That is, it fixes a lot of different problems that we're seeing in that supply chain industry. So it's not just one avenue to sort of market and promote. So I think it becomes that full circular type economy approach.
Yeah, no, it's definitely circular. As I said, we're working on the circular water use system, but by using the skins coming in from fish processing, then that's circular use of waste from fish processing. And we even have, this isn't directly ours, but a project that we kind of ignited with the forestry industry is that we're looking for sources for tannins. And when I first started putting together the formula, I discovered that we have to import the tannins from overseas. So the idea that we're bringing tree products into British Columbia is like bringing sand to the Sahara. So we reached out, and FPI, Forest Products Innovation, is now looking at a project for using hemlock waste from wood processing here in British Columbia as a potential First Nations owned business to produce commercial grade tannins, which, by the way, British Columbia did produce until the 1960s when the industry changed. So now that we're looking at natural sources again is going back to that. So that's also circular. So you've got all these different things. It just takes that mindset.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's the way I think that we have to think in the future. So I think it's great that you're forging the path on this. I want to return a little bit back to the product itself and talk a little bit about that. Through your development of the product, what have been some of the surprises you've come up with? I mean, you mentioned about the increased tensile or the higher tensile strength, but what are some of the other interesting properties, I guess, that you've found as you've been developing the leather product?
Well, I have a lot of fun because I almost never leave the house without a piece of fish leather in my purse or my pocket or somewhere on my person. And I put it in people's hands, and the reaction is so fun because first they take it to their nose and they smell it. And they go, it smells like leather. And I say, well, that's because it's leather. So basically, when you make leather, you get rid of anything that would rot, which is also the stuff that creates smell. So the smell that you smell in leather is the leather treatment itself. So this is leather. It smells exactly the same. People are really surprised by that. And so the first two questions in no particular order are usually, is it strong and does it smell? And so once we get past that, then they look at it and they're like, oh my God, that's beautiful, because every fish has a scale pocket pattern. And so different fish have different scale pocket patterns. We know that salmon leather is one of the most popular kinds of fish leather. And so that has one kind of scale pocket pattern to it. But we're also looking wherever we have sustainable fisheries and those are being processed, we're looking to work with that. So we've already started experimentations with halibut leather, for instance, and then that has a different scale pocket pattern on it. Or rockfish is a fish that tends to be sold skin off because of just some of the issues around the fish when you don't skin it. Anyway, so there's the rockfish is smaller, but it has a different scale pocket pattern that's also really beautiful. And so every time that we branch out into figuring out, okay, can we use this skin and how could we use it? It has that different pattern. And so these are all available to replace exotic leathers, such as snake or reptile. And those are animals that are killed for their skin. Like most leather comes as a byproduct of food. But exotic leathers are an exception to that. They are not. But here we're saying, okay, we have a byproduct of food and it can substitute for that. So we provide a substitute for not only unsustainable leather because we're using much more sustainable practices, but we also provide this substitute for exotic leathers.
And I can imagine the different patterns have that fashion component too. And I'm not a fashion guru at all, but just by the way I dress, you can tell that. But I can see there being some real interest in, as you mentioned, the different scale patterns between a salmon and a rockfish. So that could potentially scale up to a whole heap of different types of fashion patterns. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. That's definitely part of the plan. part of the plan as well is that we start here and we work with the sustainable fish that are being processed skin off here. But our full plan is to replicate elsewhere. So this is going to be our first seven leagues based in Vancouver. But we're also looking at eventually reproducing, whether it's elsewhere in Canada, at different fisheries in different parts of Canada, or internationally. But we're definitely looking, like, for instance, Mahi Mahi makes very nice leather as well, I happen to know. So, you know, wherever we find that right concentration of fish processing, of a sustainable fish, again, we're taking a Pacific Northwest wild approach to our development, to say we're only ever working with sustainable fisheries, whether it's MSC certified or OceanWise certified or some sort of scheme that ensures that part of what we do is we say our products are sustainable, our approach is sustainable, whether it's socially sustainable that we're looking at or environmentally sustainable, that is definitely part of our brand.
And you mentioned a bit before, and maybe to touch on it again, you said a lot of this, the fish is processed skin off. So this is really a byproduct that you're actually now making use of the whole fish, and it's a good story about it. So what is kind of the numbers? I think you mentioned about 50% of fish. Is that fair to say, that sort of proportion of fish is sort of wasted?
Yeah, on average, a fillet or a fillet, depending on how you want to say that, is on average about 50% of the fish. It depends on the kind of fish and the processing. Now, a lot of that is sold skin on, so those are not the processors that we're working with, but a certain amount of that is sold skin off. Some of that varies according to fish. Like I say, rockfish are more likely to be skinned. Some of it is according to culture. I've heard that Americans seem to want to buy their fish with skin off more than Canadians, so it also depends where it's being sold. But in all of that, what we're looking for is, where are their processors who are skinning that fish, so that's the byproduct that we're working on. Canada is not very good at keeping track of what's happening with fish waste. There aren't much of any estimations of that. And there are a bunch of questions around that. Actually, legally, you can process on the boat and then dump overboard if you're going to process on the boat, and that's perfectly legal. I have questions. I would love to hear an answer to the question about, is that good because it's going back into the ecosystem, or is that bad because it's too much of a protein dump in one place? I've certainly heard anecdotally that it kind of overwhelms an area, and so then that becomes problematic. So we need to think about, like, how are we doing things? In terms of the processors themselves, because Canada doesn't have the same kind of controls on waste that Europe has, for instance, it's that North American sense of abundance that we can just throw it out. People don't seem to care too much about it. But we need to have better numbers. Not only do my European compatriots who are doing this have firm numbers for their countries about, this is how much fish waste we have, this is the impact that we're making on it, but even the Kenyan tanneries know what they're doing. Canada is quite unusual in really not having any statistics on that. And I think we need to start looking at it as inspiration, doing it not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it is economically sensible. Iceland, a lot of your listeners will know, has the whole 100% fish process program. And between 1981 and 2018, Iceland was moving to this 100% fish. We're going to try and use 100% of every fish we land. So between that time period, their catch fell by 40%. But the value of their catch only fell by 15%. Because they were moving to using all of it, and then using the Ellen MacArthur standard definition of circular economy is not only that you use it, but you use it to the highest possible value. And so they started pushing into, what can we do in pharmaceuticals? What can we do in cosmetics? What can we do, in our case, in luxury leather? And they're finding that not only are they able to use almost all of the fish, pushing towards that 100%, but they're making way more money off of it. And so my contention to Canada is not just, this is a nice to do, but we need to use 100% of any resource that we land.
Sounds like a really interesting market potential for someone to get in there and try and sort that out as well. And at least, as you mentioned, at least get the numbers and the statistics that we know, you know, where that value lies, and then working with companies like Seven Leagues to make sure that we are utilizing as much of the fish as we possibly can. Going back to your journey now, from entrepreneur, or from, you know, frustrated person to entrepreneur to now on the verge of hopefully wonderful things with Seven Leagues Leather, what has been some of your biggest challenges that you've come across in that path?
Two challenges come to mind, and they're interrelated. So it is challenging to relaunch a completely lost industry. So Canada's leather tanning industry closed completely when our environmental standards made it such that you could no longer do chrome tanning in Canada. And then all across Canada, the tanneries all closed. So we've lost the facilities, we've lost the skills, and we're also doing veg tanning, which takes a greater amount of training and skill. But we've lost all of that. And so to propose to restart an industry that's gone is a decent challenge. Though, like I say, I think that given that the industry really needs to change, it's also an opportunity. And so that kind of cuts both ways. But then the related challenge is with the Canadian investors. And my joke with my partner is that we have the one more poke joint problem, that everyone is keen on one more poke joint, because we know what that is. We know what you, if you come to me and say, that's what you're building, I understand it. I saw one down the street, and so I can invest in that. But if you're talking about actually doing something different, it takes a leap of imagination. So American investors are less risk averse than Canadian ones. And Europeans are much more mature in terms of textile production. They still produce textiles in Europe. And so there are times that I look and I think, okay, you know, if I have to move it across the line to Bellingham, I'm a dual citizen. I could do that if I absolutely had to. I would prefer to keep it in Canada. We are looking at potentially working with some Europeans who seem much more excited. I get a lot more calls from Europe and the UK about the actual product than around Canada. So again, it's challenging to imagine new things, but I think we're it makes sense. Something that is half fish and half tree is so British Columbian. It's just hard to imagine something that could be more so.
I'm almost saying that should be like one of our cartoon characters or a mascot for British Columbia, you know, half fish, half tree type of approach. You're right. And on that, I mean, you talk about, you know, the investors are a little bit more risk averse into something that's new. There's a bit of lack of understanding and knowledge a little bit. Is it some awareness? Is it... you talked about that we did have a leather industry until we changed that for environmental regulations, which is good. But then we were probably closed-minded into saying, okay, but we can do it better. You talked about, you know, using, I think, the hemlock waste as a tanning. So, I mean, is it a bit of lack of understanding or awareness that needs some education around what this could be before we get that investment? Or is it really just, you know, it's too different?
Not sure. I mean, some of it, I think, is part of Canada's supercluster culture, which, you know, the supercluster in BC is all about digital tech. So when you live in Vancouver and you tell someone you're an entrepreneur, they ask you what app you're developing. Like, there's just not even imagination that we make anything other than digital creations. So, you know, the manufacturing supercluster is in Ontario, just like the ocean supercluster is in Halifax. And we're just establishing more of this ocean culture out here in British Columbia quite a bit later than they are, because that's where the feds aimed the money fire hose, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the goods and bads of these superclusters is, yes, they develop something in that area, but they suck it away from other areas. So, I mean, I think that that's... that's potentially a part of it. Some of it is just getting people to the idea. Like when I tell them, you know, Prada, Gucci, Nike, BMW used some German-made fish leather as like detailing on the dashboard and around the shift. Balenciaga, Puma, like really big names have used this material. So, you know, I think there's, and I know from, I'm not going to name them, but I know from some of the inquiries that I get that there's a taste for it. So that once we're producing it, there is the market there. So it's just having that conversation. But, you know, I've got various, through the different accelerators that I've participated in, I've had various different EIRs, entrepreneur in residence, giving me advice. And one said to me recently, oh, you know, you're the only business I've ever advised that actually makes a physical product.
Yeah, we need to sort of get back to that idea that we can, you know, Canadian, and I say that as an Australian Canadian, we, you know, we can make stuff. We can make some fantastic stuff, and we need to get excited about it again and make sure that that investment dollars and, you know, we can get behind it. You talked about the skills that we've lost. I mean, this is an opportunity to build those skills again. You know, we've got all this opportunity to grow this. And I think this is one of those avenues we can take along. So, yeah, we do need to get out there and promote it a little bit more that we have this opportunity, I think, anyway.
I mean, we all wear clothes. We don't get up and put on our digital accoutrements in the morning. We all actually get dressed. And as fashion starts to look at sustainable fashion and the impact of fashion, we're also starting to change what textiles we put in. That goes back to the ESG and brands looking for solutions, because you know, it's coming home to roost, that deal with the devil in terms of how things are made, and change is starting. So the market is growing.
That's good. It's good to hear. You talked about some of the challenges. You've had some supporters and some help along the way. Who's sort of been the key ones standing there behind you, supporting you on this path?
Well, they come from a few different quarters. I've mentioned the forestry industry, and I've been really impressed. So Forest Products Innovation actually provides us free startup space at the moment. They've been amazing supporters. We were directed to them by the iBio, which is the Indigenous Bioeconomy branch of forestry in the BC Ministry of Forestry. They've also been great supporters to us. On the ocean side, we are very proud members of the 2022 cohort of the Ocean Startup Project. And that's been a fantastic community to be part of and to learn from. A few others were part of Project Zero right now, which is a circular economy accelerator. We've got some other good news on the horizon, which I am not allowed to say until September, but we have great news in September about other folks who are going to be helping us. And so that's all been good. And we've made good use of a lot of the hiring subsidies that the government provides, given we've done a certain amount of hiring students. And because diversity is part of what we do anyway, and we would be doing no matter what, it's nice that some of those programs come with a little extra support for that.
Yeah, that's good. And you talked, mentioned earlier in the session that your first full-time or first paid position was an Indigenous researcher, I guess you could say, or you talked about Indigenous partners. Why is it important to make sure that your relationship with them is tight and strong?
I look at Seven Leagues as being designing a business that is profitable and uses that profit as a force for good. So part of that is being environmentally sustainable, but part of it is also being socially and economically sustainable. We all need to have a future moving forward. So shared prosperity has to be part of how businesses are designed. We're here for the long haul. We're here to ensure that the way we do business continues to support the people and the land where we're doing business. So part of that is making sure that we are working with Indigenous folks. It's also part of being inspired by whether it's the Mi'kmaq concept of two-eyed seeing, where one eye is the Indigenous perspective and the other is the Western, or also I've heard that termed as the braid, where you're braiding together different ideas and concepts and you get a stronger rope by putting those strands together. We believe it's stronger to all work together.
Yeah, I love that that concept and that sentiment. It makes sense to take from different perspectives and learn from different experiences. Now I'm going to just chat about the future. You mentioned you got some exciting news that you can't tell us about. That's fine. You know, we'll repost and, you know, promote, you know, the news in September. I'm not even sure what it is either, so you know, I'm embargoed. Couple of things in this. If everything comes according to, where do you see Seven Leagues in 2 years? And maybe expand that to, because you talked about an industry, is there an opportunity for a leather tanning industry back in Canada and British Columbia? And then what do you need to achieve that with Seven Leagues? What sort of support and investment do you need? Not specifically the investment in terms of dollars, but investment from companies and people and interest level. If you can just share a little bit about that, that would be great to finish up.
Absolutely. So there were a whole lot of questions, it sounded like, that came all tied into one. So 2 years from now, we hope to have both a small visible micro tannery in a place where people are coming through so they can see what we're doing. We can demonstrate how we make leather and like take transparency literally by in fact making our leather where people can see, so that we can answer questions about how it's made and how this can be helpful. So that would be sort of our toehold in, you know, imagine it potentially on Granville Island or somewhere like that, where we can talk about what we're doing. Then in the background, we have a larger facility to achieve those economies of scale, because our goal is that 80% of our production is B2B. So we want to be supplying our sustainable leather to some of those bigger brands so that they can use our product and improve their own sustainability by working with us. And then, as I said, we have plans to replicate in other places. So all of that would be cooking 2 years from now. To do that, we do need financing. Part of the things that I'm excited about, we are bringing on a new leather tanner who's going to be coming. We did have to go outside of Canada to do that. Sometimes people think that tanning is a trade like, say, carpentry. It's more like applied chemistry. So you can get a PhD in leather tanning at a lot of universities globally. So Northampton University in the UK is the university that mostly we have referred to and spoken with, and is reputed to be the source of some of the best sort of more sustainability forward-looking tanners. So we're pretty excited that we're hoping to be bringing a Northampton University grad over soon. But to do that, like I say, currently we have benefited from FPI hosting us very kindly for free at their facility on UBC campus. That's not going to last forever. So we would be looking at the financing to outfit the facility moving forward. So we are definitely looking for what that would look like as a partnership. And we're open to different ways that might look, again, always looking towards sustainability. So whether there might be a First Nation that wanted to partner with us on that and that they might have some goals for why that would be and how that would work, we're open to that conversation. If it's someone else who says, you know, no, look, I see what you're talking about. I'm super excited. I'm looking to invest. That would be good. Whether we end up going non-conventional and looking more at, fundraise, an online fundraiser to get some of the initial capital to get us over the hump, and then we can finance it through revenue. We're open to different ways of doing that. But if anyone is listening to that and they're excited and they're interested, I would definitely love to hear from them.
Well, it is. It's just it's providing that opportunity, right? And I see it from my perspective, listening to you today, learning that it's not just there's Seven Leagues, but this is part of a much bigger journey too. And it gives us an opportunity to get into something that's new skill sets, new industry. It opens up new doors. And as you mentioned before, it makes, you know, us think in British Columbia that we can manufacture things again, and they're important to the industry. So I think it's a wonderful journey, and I only hope the best for the next few years for Seven Legs.
Thank you. We talk about ourselves as an innovation company rather than as a fish leather company. So fish leather is our entry point into how we're going to be doing this innovation. But whether that is, you know, where that takes us next, whether it's in the, like I said, biodegradable waterproof coatings, whether it's that, you know, one of our waste products from what we do are the fish scales. Does someone else want to use those fish scales to make something? Or will we end up using those fish scales to produce another product? Or it's this mindset of, here are the resources that we have. What can we make out of them? And I think that if you start looking at problems that way, rather than individually, but taking this holistic and curious and forward-looking view, that, I mean, it's much more hopeful. It's also the way we're going to get out of the mess we're in.
Totally agree. And Tasha, it's been inspirational listening to your journey and what Seven Legs is doing. And I just thank you for your time today, and wish you luck in your future ventures. And I'm looking forward to being a witness to the success of Seven Legs. So appreciate your time.
Fantastic. Thank you. I really appreciate the questions and the conversation. It was a lot of fun. And would love to hear from anyone who has more questions. Feel free to contact me. Our website is Seven Leagues. So that's the number 7, LEAGUES.com. You can reach me at Tasha, TASHA, at sevenleagues.com. Again, always the number, never the word. We also have a newsletter. We only put it out 4 times a year. So our goal is quality, not quantity. And we will keep you up to date on the things that we're doing. So if you want to sign up for that, that's on the website. And of course, we're out there on social media as well. Always glad to get more followers.
Thanks, Tasha. And thanks to our listeners for joining us for Coast Talks. If you'd like to learn more about our work, visit our website at canadacoast.ca. And follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. For now, that's it. And thank you for participating. Bye for now.